堂听 class.com。
大学英语四级考试听力一百篇第三和
Unit 55 Part 1 Jogging became popular some 20 years ago and has remained a favorite way of keeping fit for lots of people. If you have never tried it and are normally healthy, there's no reason why you shouldn't start jogging today. It is basically running at a steady speed over short or longer distances. It is a form of exercise which can be enjoyed by males and females of any age. Teenagers can jog and so, with caution, can people in their 70s and 80s. Most people jog for half an hour or 45 minutes each day, but you can jog longer if you choose. One of the main advantages of jogging over many other sports is that it can be done anywhere. People jog around college campuses, around housing estates and parks, in the countryside, and even in urban areas. Special courts, fields, pitches, and running tracks are not necessary. Similarly, no special equipment is required. No costly bats, rackets, or balls, and no expensive sports kits. Good quality running shoes are advisable, but otherwise, the jogger can simply wear loose, comfortable clothing. Special jogging suits are widely available these days and can be bought quite cheaply, but these are not essential. In addition, to being able to jog anywhere, you can also jog at any time, in any season. It's not unusual to see joggers exercising in the height of summer or in the depth of winter. Jogging is a solo sport. You don't need to wait until you have gathered a team or found a partner. You can jog alone. There's no harm, of course, in jogging with a friend. One of the greatest freedoms of jogging is simply being able to do it, whether it's early in the morning or late at night. A few words of warning, however. Lone female joggers should be especially careful to choose sensible jogging routes, particularly at nighttime, to minimize the risk of being attacked.
Question 1. Who can jog? Question 2. What is one of the main advantages of jogging over other sports? Question 3. Which is advisable for jogging? Question 4. What equipment do you need for jogging? Question 5. When can one jog?
Part 2. 1. Jogging is basically running at a steady speed over short or longer distances. 2. Anyone who jogs can jog no more than 40 minutes. 3. Because special running suits are quite cheap, everyone who jogs wears one. 4. If you are female, you must be very careful in choosing your jogging routes.
Unit 56, Part 1. The act of jogging doesn't require any special training skill. You do need to be basically healthy, and if you are in any doubt, you should consult your doctor. But then, after a few basic warm-up bends and stretches, you are ready to begin. You simply start running, gently, and then build up to a steady pace. You then maintain that pace over your chosen distance. Jogging is not sprinting, so do not overtire yourself by trying to go too fast. A steady, comfortable pace is your aim. Don't overdo things. Jogging is excellent for keeping fit. It's good for the lungs, the heart, and the circulation. It's easy and it's convenient. Why don't you try it? If you require more information, talk to one of the instructors at the sports center. We're only too happy to help. Please remember, if you do decide to jog, talk to your doctor first if you have any health worries. And ladies, do not jog alone in quiet places, especially after dark.
Question 1. What is required to begin jogging? Question 2. How should you run at the beginning? Question 3. What is jogging good for? Question 4. When should you talk to one of the instructors at the sports center?
Part 2. 1. Jogging is similar to sprinting. 2. When jogging, run as fast as possible. 3. Jogging is very convenient. 4. No one should jog alone in quiet places.
Unit 57, Part 1. A unique laboratory at the University of Chicago is busy only at night. It is a dream laboratory where researchers are at work studying dreamers. Their findings have revealed that everyone dreams from 3 to 7 times a night, although in ordinary life, a person may remember none or only one of his dreams. While the subjects, usually students, are asleep, special machines record their brain waves and eye movements, as well as the body movements that signal the end of a dream. Surprisingly, all subjects sleep soundly. Observers report that a person usually fidgets before a dream. Once the dream has started, his body relaxes and his eyes become more active, as if the curtain had gone up on a show. As soon as the machine indicates that the dream is over, a buzzer wakens the sleeper. He sits up, records his dream, and goes back to sleep, perhaps to dream some more. Researchers have found that if the dreamer is wakened immediately after his dream, he can usually recall the entire dream. If he is allowed to sleep even 5 more minutes, his memory of the dream will have faded.
Question 1. Who are at work studying dreamers? Question 2. What have their findings revealed? Question 3. What do the special machine record while the subjects are asleep? Question 4. What usually happens to a person before a dream? Question 5. When is a dream recorded in the dream laboratory?
Part 2. 1. In ordinary life, a person may remember only 2 of his dreams. 2. The researchers find that once the dream has started, his body relaxes. 3. If the dreamer is wakened immediately after his dream, he can usually recall the entire dream.
Unit 58, Part 1. When Sebastian was a boy at school, his favorite lesson was art, and he won several prizes for it. Once he left school, he got a position as a clerk in a bank, but 3 times a week he went to evening classes in art, and whenever he had time on the weekends, he painted. In the bank, Sebastian sometimes had to deal with a man who owned a picture shop, and after he had had a few conversations with him, Sebastian invited him to his home one evening to see some of his work. "Then perhaps you could tell me whether I can really be a good artist and earn some money from my painting," Sebastian said hopefully. The man said he was prepared to come and see what he thought of Sebastian's work, so he arrived one evening at Sebastian's home. Sebastian took the man to his studio and started to show him some of his pictures, with some pride and hope. The man looked at them one after the other while Sebastian watched his face, but to Sebastian's disappointment, the man did not say anything, and his expression did not change when looking at any of them either. Then, when he had finished, he looked around, and his glance fell on something else. A happy look came over his face for the first time, and he said, "Now I like this one very much. It's so full of deep feeling. I'm sure I could sell this one for you." "That," said Sebastian, "is the place where I clean the paint off my brushes."
Question 1. What was Sebastian? Question 2. Where did Sebastian meet the owner of a picture shop? Question 3. Why did the man visit Sebastian's home? Question 4. Why was Sebastian disappointed when the man looked at his pictures? Question 5. What did the man like most in the house?
Part 2. 1. Sebastian went to evening classes to begin studying art. 2. When Sebastian invited the man to his house, he thought that he could be a good artist someday. 3. Sebastian showed the man all his pictures. 4. The man showed special interest in one picture Sebastian painted.
Unit 59, Part 1. You have probably seen sports car racing on TV or at the movies, but have you ever seen a drag race? Drag racing started in the United States in 1953. The first drag tracks were built by people who were worried about teenagers who were racing their cars in public streets. A track is an absolutely straight course about 1,200 feet long. The track has to be straight because the cars go so fast that they cannot possibly take a corner. Each race lasts only about 7 seconds. The cars used in drag racing don't have much in common with other racing cars. In the front is something that looks like a bicycle wheel. Huge, fat tires are at the back. A powerful engine is usually in front of the driver. During a race, there is sometimes so much smoke from the engines and the burning rubber from the tires that it's hard to see the cars. The fans don't mind. They say the best races are those where the cars go so fast you can't see them at all. Drag racing has changed from a teenage pastime to big business. There are professional races now. A good drag racer can earn as much as $65,000 a year.
Question 1. When was drag racing started? Question 2. Why do drag race tracks have to be absolutely straight? Question 3. Why is it sometimes impossible to see the racers? Question 4. How long does a race last? Question 5. Why can we say that the drag racing car hasn't much in common with other racing cars?
Part 2. 1. Drag racing started in the United States in 1953. 2. A track is an absolutely straight course about 2,100 feet long. 3. Drag racing is a teenage pastime. 4. There are professional drag races now.
Unit 60, Part 1. Traditionally, the British royal family does not get involved in politics. Its role is seen as ceremonial, and its members are expected to avoid controversy. Indeed, the royals seem to spend most of their time opening new buildings, visiting the poor and the sick, and smiling and shaking hands. It therefore came as something of a surprise when Diana, the Princess of Wales, announced on a trip to Angola last January that she had traveled to the country to support the Red Cross's campaign for a total ban on all anti-personnel landmines. It was well known that the princess had been trying to find a new role for herself since her divorce from the Prince of Wales, but few observers expected her to take sides on a contentious political issue like the banning of landmines. Yet within hours of arriving in Angola, television screens around the world were filled with images of her comforting victims injured in explosions caused by landmines. The princess used every opportunity during her visit to repeat this message: "We must stop landmines." To the international public, her words made perfect sense. But back in London, her views were not shared by some members of the British government, which refused to support a ban on these weapons. Angry politicians launched an attack on the princess in the press. The princess responded by brushing aside the criticisms. For the princess, the trip to this war-torn country on Africa's southwest coast was an excellent opportunity to use her popularity to show the world how much destruction and suffering landmines can cause. She says the experience has also given her the chance to get closer to people and their problems, something she wasn't able to do properly as the wife of the Prince of Wales.
Question 1. Which country did Diana, Princess of Wales, visit last January? Question 2. Why did Diana make a trip to Angola, according to herself? Question 3. Who expected Diana to take sides on a contentious political issue? Question 4. What is the British government's attitude towards landmines?
Part 2. 1. It is traditional that the British royal family does not get involved in politics. 2. Diana, the Princess of Wales, has tried to find a new role for herself since her divorce from the Prince of Wales. 3. Diana's trip to Angola was not reported to the public.
Unit 61, Part 1. When you wish to give someone a gift, it is always good to remember some of the basic rules. Consider the age and sex and the length of your acquaintance, as well as the occasion. You should know when it is all right to give a gift of money and when it would be improper. In any case, when you receive a present, don't forget to send a thank you note as soon as you possibly can. Often, people like to take with them a gift for the host's wife of a party they have been invited to. This can be something just for the host's wife, or something for the party, like sweets or fruits, things which all may enjoy. If you stay in a friend's house overnight or for a weekend, it is usual to take a gift showing appreciation for their friendliness and their kindness. Again, you may choose something for the host's wife alone or for the entire family. Sometimes, it is not possible to return a favor as you would like to. When this happens, you may show your own thoughtfulness by giving a thank you gift, especially if you can find something unusual. Weddings are times when gifts of money are greatly appreciated and quite acceptable. You should never leave money when you have been a weekend guest. Try to use imagination in choosing a thank you gift.
Question 1. What should you consider when you wish to give someone a gift? Question 2. What do people usually do if they are invited to a party? Question 3. What kind of gift should you take if you stay at a friend's home for a weekend? Question 4. On what occasion gifts of money are quite acceptable?
Part 2. 1. Gifts of money are always proper and acceptable. 2. If you are invited to a party, you can take with you something that everyone may enjoy. 3. If you are going to stay only one night at your friend's home, you had better not take any present. 4. When returning a favor, you may show your own thoughtfulness.
Unit 62, Part 1. Anyone who has been in a foreign country not knowing the language will appreciate this story, which has been told many times in Mexico. A very shy man from Mexico once had to make a business trip to the United States, but he knew no English. Upon his return, he told one of his friends that the bad part of his trip was that he ate nothing but coffee and donuts for the entire 5 days. "Why?" asked the friend. "That's all I knew." "Didn't you try?" "Well, yes, I did," he replied. "After 3 days, I sat at the counter in a restaurant and heard the man next to me say, 'I'll have a steak.' They brought him steak, potatoes, vegetables, and everything, so I said the same thing to the waitress, 'I'll have a steak.' She answered, going 100 kilometers per hour, 'Would you like rib steak, T-bones, porterhouse? You want it rare, medium, a baked potato, french fries? What will you have?' Coffee and donuts was all I could answer, so that's what I got."
Question 1. Where did the shy man go once? Question 2. What did he eat during his trip? Question 3. Why didn't he try some other food?
Part 2. 1. The Mexican man went to the United States on vacation. 2. He wasn't able to have a steak at the restaurant just because he couldn't understand the waitress.
Unit 63. Part 1. Well, I manage a small branch of a large supermarket, and we lose a lot of money through shoplifting. I have to try to prevent it, or else I'll lose all my profits. A lot of shoplifting is done by young people, teenagers in groups. They do it for fun. They're not frightened, so we have to make it difficult for them. Obviously, a supermarket can't have chains or alarms on the goods, so we have store detectives who walk around like ordinary shoppers. Otherwise, they'll be recognized. We have big signs up saying shoplifters will be prosecuted, but that doesn't help much. We've started putting cash desks at all the exits. We found we have to do that, or else the shoplifters will walk straight out with things. Of course, that worries the ordinary shopper who hasn't found what he wanted. We also use closed-circuit television, but that's expensive. In fact, all good methods of prevention are quite expensive, and naturally they make our prices more expensive. But it has to be done, otherwise shoplifting itself will make all the prices much higher, and the public doesn't want that.
Question 1. What measures do they take to prevent shoplifting? Question 2. By whom is a lot of shoplifting done? Question 3. Why do they do shoplifting? Question 4. Where are the cash desks put?
Part 2. 1. The author has lost all his profits through shoplifting. 2. A supermarket can also have chains and alarms to frighten the shoplifters. 3. The store detectives can be easily recognized.
Unit 64, Part 1. In 1984, Sade leapt to fame with the release of her debut single, Your Love is King, which went straight into the British top 10 charts, and her debut album, Diamond Life, which stayed in the UK charts for 98 weeks and was the biggest selling debut album by a British female singer. Her music was played everywhere, her face appeared on countless magazine covers, and she was hounded by the media. But just over a decade later, the picture has changed dramatically, and Sade's Diamond Life, in Britain at least, is over. Her fourth album, Love Deluxe, released in 1992, sold only a fraction of her first two albums, Diamond Life and Promise, 1985, and was criticized by some as being too like her previous albums. Towards the end of last year, The Best of Sade was released, whose sales, again, are far less than those of her first two albums. So why have Sade's UK fans deserted her? Between her third album, Stronger Than Pride, 1988, and Love Deluxe, there was a gap of 4 years. British music fans have very short memories, and 4 years without releasing even a single is not the best way to keep yourself popular in the charts. Then there is her music. Her style is restrained and understated. It suited perfectly the 80s, but is now clearly out of fashion in the 90s. Sade doesn't seem too worried by her now fickle British supporters for two good reasons. Firstly, she is still hugely popular throughout the world. She has sold over 32.5 million albums worldwide, and in the United States, her album sales rival those of Madonna and Michael Jackson. Secondly, she is a very private person. She disliked the intense publicity of the 80s, and now enjoys her relative obscurity. From a North London house, she can come and go as she pleases. "People here are indifferent to me now, and I enjoy that indifference," she says. Sade herself is not clear as to why her UK fans stopped buying her albums.
Question 1. When did Sade become famous? Question 2. Why was her fourth album criticized when it was released in 1992? Question 3. Whom does her style suit? Question 4. What is her attitude towards her fickle supporters?
Part 2. 1. Sade is still popular in the world, though she has been deserted by her UK fans. 2. Sade knows very well why she is no longer loved by her UK fans.
Unit 65. Part 1. Helen was a student at a university. She was studying English. She was a clever girl, and she was also very good at sports and games. Her best sport was throwing the javelin, and she always won a prize for that at university games. Helen's best friend was called Mary. She went to the same classes as Helen, and she was a very good runner. The two girls often went out together in the evenings. One evening, they went to practice their sports in the university grounds, and when they had finished, they walked part of the way home together. But at one corner, they had to say goodbye, because their homes were in different directions. "Be careful on your way home," Mary said to Helen. "I would be happier if our houses were nearer." "Me too," answered Helen. The streets were very quiet at that time of the evening. The next morning, Helen and Mary met at an English class, and Helen said to Mary, "Do you know what happened to me after I left you yesterday evening?" "No," answered Mary anxiously. "What happened to you?" "Well," Helen said, "while I was walking home along that quiet street near my house, a thief came up behind me and pulled my necklace off my neck and ran away with it." "I wish I'd been there," Mary said angrily. "If I had been, I'd have run after the man, and I'd probably have caught him." "But what are you going to do now? Have you been to the police?" "No," Helen answered with a smile. Why not? Mary asked in surprise. Because, Helen said, when the man pulled my necklace, I turned round suddenly and put my hand out to try to stop him. I caught a chain which he was wearing round his neck and pulled it off him. My necklace was a plastic one.
Question 1. Where did Helen and Mary practice their sports? Question 2. Why didn't the girls walk all the way home together? Question 3. How did Helen lose her necklace? Question 4. What would Mary have done if she had been there? Question 5. What was Helen's chain made of?
Part 2. 1. Both Helen and Mary are good at throwing the javelin and running. 2. The two girls seldom went out together in the evenings. 3. Helen pulled a chain off the thief.
Unit 66, Part 1. We arranged that Kissinger would fly to Vietnam for consultations early in July and then stop in Pakistan on the way back. There, he would develop a stomachache that would require him to stay in bed and not be seen by the press. Then, with President Yehaz's cooperation, he would be taken to an airport where a Pakistan jet would fly him over the mountains to China. Kissinger's trip was given the code name Polo, after Marco Polo, another Western traveler who made history by journeying to China. Everything went without a hitch. His indisposition in Islamabad received only minor attention from reporters covering him. They accepted the story that he would be confined to bed for at least a couple of days and began making arrangements for their own entertainment. Because of the need for complete secrecy and the lack of any direct communication facilities between Beijing and Washington, I knew that we would have no word from Kissinger while he was in China. Even after he had returned to Pakistan, it would still be important to maintain secrecy, so before Kissinger left, we agreed on a single code word, Eureka, which he would use if his mission were successful and the presidential trip had been arranged. On July 11th, Al Haig, who knew our code word, phoned me to say that a cable from Kissinger had arrived. "What's the message?" I asked. "Eureka," he replied.
Question 1. Where was Kissinger arranged to stop on his trip back to the United States that July? Question 2. Where would Kissinger fly to from Pakistan? Question 3. What was needed about his trip to China? Question 4. What did the single code word Eureka mean? Question 5. What message did Kissinger send on July 11th?
Part 2. 1. Kissinger's trip to China was given the code name Polo. 2. Kissinger took a Pakistan jet to China with the cooperation of President Yehaz. 3. The reporters were told that Kissinger was in bed because of a stomachache when he was actually making a trip to China.